Now, if you've liked mandolin playing in the UK and you've decided to come out to Spain, don't be surprised if you hear George Long and his mandolin on the Costa Blanca. Like a lot of people, you get a bit fed up of what you're doing and where you're living, and you want to change your life and see what is ahead in the years to come. So let's say hello to George and welcome in, George.
Yeah, hi Vince, fantastic to be here.
Yeah, isn't it, with the weather and everything.
Yeah,
so
sunshine again, yeah.
Yeah, and you've just decided that you're going to change your life. How did the decision come about?
Yeah, I think the wife was thinking about it for a couple of years, and she persuaded me to sell everything we got, up sticks, buy a motorhome and travel around Europe. We're just going to travel around, see all the sights there was to see. Life's very short, and we thought we'd get out there and have a look.
Yeah. So you put your mandolin nice and carefully wrapped up somewhere in the van, just to make sure you didn't bump it round on the journey.
Oh yeah, it's a four berth mobile home we got, but two of the berths are taken up by all my equipment: guitars, mandolins, ukuleles,
yeah,
amplifiers, speakers.
It's nice for me to be able to ask you about, you know, your decision making, because for us, we did this 10 years ago now, and it takes a lot to move away, but then when you get involved in what comes along, it makes you realise that you do need to move away to even get other people to understand the music that you're trying to present to them.
Yeah, everyone thought we were being really brave, and some of my friends were a bit negative, going, oh, what are you going to do when you have a row? You can't go into the other room, you can't know where to go. You're stuck in a van with each other 24 hours a day. But then they admitted that when it comes to time that we were actually leaving, they said, well, we're just jealous. I'd be too scared to sell the house, sell the furniture, cut all my ties and jump in the van and go. But they really admire what we're doing. They think we're very brave.
I've got friends who basically, they won't even get on a plane and come and see us out in Spain because they don't like flying, you know, and I can understand that. But, you know, if you've said it already, life is too short and you've decided to do something about it.
Yeah, well, we thought we'd do it while we were young enough. We're both sort of 55 now, and it was fit and active and healthy. I thought, well, why wait till we're 65, 67 before we can get out and have a go to doing this? Might be too old then.
Good for you. Okay, let's go back to the very beginning then. So, born in Liverpool?
Yeah, I was born 88 B, Whole House, Cherry Gardens, just off Scotty Road. I could look out the window and see the Mersey Tunnel.
Yeah.
But I only lived there for 3 months.
Right.
And I was brought up in Edinburgh, but every year we'd come back to my mother's side of the family, the Scousers and Irish, and my dad's side is from Edinburgh and the Isle of Skye.
Very interesting. So a very Celtic background, really.
It is, isn't it? Yeah.
And I meet so many from Liverpool. It's almost like we're meant to meet. This is how interesting it is. And then while you're talking, I don't know what we're going to be talking about over the next hour, but there are things that crop up, then you think, oh, yeah, hang on. Because I used to do a place not far from where you were born, down in Friary Street. Priory Street, I think it was.
Yeah, Priory Street.
The Friary. And it was a club where the friars used to come in. I can remember doing my songs, and then I was with a duo, you know, and then the door burst open, in come a couple of friars with a plate of sandwiches, all curled up at the end, you know, and people came from everywhere with stuff to eat, and it was a very, very social type of club, which I wonder whether these are still about, really, you know.
Well, they're coming short on supply now. There's a couple closing down every week, pubs and clubs going to the wall.
Okay, so you've been up in Edinburgh, and then how did you, or did you, get back to Liverpool? What happened next?
Oh, well, my dad done his national service. He came off the army and got a job working for Tarmac. And he started off in Scotland. He ended up in Liverpool, where he met my mother. He fell in love, got married, he had me. But my dad couldn't get a job. He was trying to become a doctor, believe it or not. And he couldn't get his union card to get a job. So when I was 3 months old, he says, but we're going back to Edinburgh. So I believe it was a 19-hour journey on a bus from Liverpool to Edinburgh. We lived in Leith for 7 years, and a bit nearer the town centre for another 4 years. And when I was 11, My dad got transferred with his job, still working for Tarmac, to Skelmersdale. That's what they built Skelmersdale.
Now, this would be a time, probably, I'm trying to think back, but I did play a couple of places in Skelmersdale. I used to go across, you know, we like so many gigging duos or on my own. There was a pub I went to in Skelmersdale. I can't remember where it was, but I can the biggest thing I can remember is Concrete.
Was it the Mucky Duck or the Viking?
The Viking seems to ring a bell.
That was in the shopping centre. Bottom of the shopping centre, the Viking. Yeah.
Yeah, and I can remember sort of like a ring road and a walkover.
That would be
a lot of concrete.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's go to your musical influences then. Did Mum or Dad play anything?
My dad had to go play in the bagpipes when he was in Scotland. And he would be given his homework each week, go home and learn this and that, and he'd go home and make his own tunes up on the bagpipe. So he got thrown out of the bagpipe band. And on the other side of the family, a few of them played the accordion.
Right.
And I think I've been about 7 years old. I found the banjo in the back room with two strings on. That must have belonged to someone in the family, but no one could remember who it was. And I learned to just plonk some tunes out on this banjo. Then I run out and showed my mum and dad. I learned to play The Last Post.
Lovely.
and they were quite impressed. So he saved up and bought me a guitar.
And what age would you be then?
7, 8.
Okay, so we're about 64, 65, something like that.
Been, yes.
So, you see, my dad, although he played the fiddle, he had a cotton reel for the bridge, which was ridiculous, really. But, you know, I used to love him getting the old case out. He'd play the jigs. But he hated me going anywhere near music. He didn't want me to go in the clubs, didn't want me to go out. And, you know, basically, we were definitely at odds as far as music was concerned, which is really weird when I think back.
Yeah,
because my dad must have liked music, you know. But of course, the swinging 60s, it was a time when everything was changing. Now, it came into the 70s, and of course, you know, it was all the Stack Eels and...
the glam rock, yeah.
And dare I say it, Gary Glitter and people like that would be not seen as the demons they became, but would certainly be seen as somebody that was rather strange with the clothes he wanted to wear.
Well, you couldn't walk down the street then, could you? The glam rock, you know, with Slade, Sweet, Wizard, the Basic, you'd all those.
Yeah. I had, funny enough, I was only talking yesterday to John Christian, a friend of mine, who was in the Basic Rollers in Benidorm. So it's just weird how things happen. But I do remember getting a pair of platform shoes, and, you know, they, because I was DJing in the clubs at that time. Did you ever go in the Cabin in Liverpool?
I went to the Cabin, but not when it was the original Cabin.
Right.
When it got renovated, excavated. And
but what about the Cabin, the one at the top of Wood Street?
Oh, the Cabin?
Yeah.
No, I don't think I ever went there.
Right. What about, did you ever go to Reese's Ballroom in Clayton Square?
Oh, yeah, I played there, yeah.
Did you?
Yeah.
Because I'm beginning to wonder, as we're talking here, whether or not your band might have come... I used to do something called the Vince Tracy Music Power Show, and it was in Clayton's Square, Reese's.
In Birkenhead, yeah.
No, Reese's in Clayton Square.
Oh, yeah, I've got you. Yeah.
And basically, all the ones that had been doing something fairly good locally, or the Radio 1 hits, used to come on my show, and they'd go down the other end and set up. I'd have my groups that would come in, and the big stacks that used to love James Brown and the Tamla Motown stuff and that sort of music, you know.
Yeah.
But did you ever do that gig?
It was in the '80s when we had the Beatles revival band.
Oh, that's right.
A tribute band. So yeah. I'm not sure if he would have been.
No, the '80s. Might have been around. Okay, now the first song that you liked on the radio, you were telling me off mic, was.
Oh, I think it maybe influenced me playing guitar. I heard Apache.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what year it came up, but I was only young, but I was really taken in with the sound that Hank was creating on the guitar, and I was wanting to copy it. When I eventually got a guitar, it was one of the first tunes I learned. But I learned how to tune the guitar first. That took a little while.
Yeah. Well, I put it up again last night or the night before. I was watching a DVD of the Fender Celebration. And he comes along with his son. And I think they did a... Well, they did do Apache, I remember now.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, it was... it was a song, it was pivotal, wasn't it, really? Because I used to love doing that one.
Yeah, it's influenced so many fantastic guitarists. Brian May likes him, Mark Knopfler loves Hank Marvin. I think he's influenced every recognised guitarist that is now, was influenced heavily by Hank, I think.
Okay, now, how did you become part of Penny Lane then? What was the year and what happened?
It would have been the early 80s. I'd always played my guitar and had little bands going, or your mates come round, you play in the bedroom and play in the local pub. Then my younger brother took an interest in drumming, and him and his mates got together and started a bit of a 60s Beatles tribute band working for a local agent. And the band I was in stepped up and he said, well, come and join us. They changed their name to Penny Lane. And we didn't know whether to be a disco band or a Beatles band. We loved the Beatles, as most musicians do. Done an audition for an agency and asked him which way did he think we should go. And he said, I want us to be a Beatles band. So he bought us a van, a PA system. Took us all, got us made some measure Beatles suits. And a month later, there was one John Lennon with us. Tragic event. But then, we were doing a Beatles show. And everybody in the country was wanting someone that looked like the Beatles and sounded like the Beatles. So we were four young scousers, Beatles haircuts, Beatles suits, authentic equipment. And we got booked everywhere. The agent said, you're packing your jobs and you're turning a professional. And we got booked all around Europe. We got on telly. And we worked with all the big stars from the 60s, which was a bonus.
Absolutely wonderful. I at that time, I was... I probably still have my Beatles. I think I've always had a Beatles suit, actually, ever since, ever since about 16 and going to
the time. Mine, it won't fit me now, but
I like the gear, actually. I did like, I mean, the thing about the Beatles was it was the full package. You also had, like a little uniform when you went to the cabin and the iron door and places like that. You know, you'd have your Beatles jacket and a pull neck sweater. Drain pipes and a pair of either pointed shoes or chisels, and you know, I mean, it was, I quite like the fashion. So, the next thing is, you've got a few gigs round Liverpool, was it first?
Yeah, no, the agent we joined, we lived in Scamsdale, which is sort of halfway between Wigan and Liverpool, and we went to a big Wigan agent. He got us booked up and down the country. It was called the LE Agency. I don't know if you ever heard of them. And then he sent us to Germany. He went to the army barracks around Germany and got us on a circuit over there entertaining the troops. So we used to go to Germany. We do 10 shows in a week, 7 days. We'd go for the week, do 10 shows. Then we'd get into 2 weeks and then 3 weeks. We ended up spending most of our time in Germany. It was a fantastic time.
So where were you finding most of your improvement for your playing coming? Was it the fact that you played every night, or was it the fact that you were with other people that were playing?
I think we started off playing the songs that we liked and that we thought we could do well. I think everyone starts off that way. But then it became a little bit of a show. We built a replica of the cavern, the backlog made out of 8x4 sheets of hardboard. And we had a little routine, and we just go on and going through the set, take a bow and get a 1-1-hour spot we used to do. And it made us like little robots. So I think it detracted from being a flexible, versatile musician. For years, we just went on and done the show. And we didn't have time to do this because we're travelling for the next show, and the next one, and the next one. It took quite a while to introduce a new song and get rid of one. It took a little bit of work.
So what was the likes of the first numbers that you were doing on the first, you know, first couple of years?
In Penny Lane, all the number ones, it was what we stuck to. That was the songs that most people knew. And every social club we played, and that's what people wanted to hear.
Right.
With the death of John Lennon, they wanted to be Elizabeth the Youth. We got to the length and breadth of the country, and all over Europe.
And what was your own personal favourite Beatles song, or what is?
I think each Beatles song would tell their own little stories. I wouldn't have a favourite, I like all of them.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to play a little track here. Let's see, we'll go for this one. Right, you talk us through this one. So what were you listening to?
Oh, this is when I left the Beatles. That's Dennis Roussos, Forever and Ever.
Right, okay. The big. Now, he was with a band as well, wasn't he? I'm trying to remember the name of his band.
It's a heavy rock band, and it's... was it Yes? Was it Yes? No.
No, I don't think so. I should remember this, but I can't. But he had a great big bell tent on him, didn't he?
He was a huge
man. Okay, and this is you on the mandolin, of course. At what stage would you say were you with your mandolin playing? Was it sort of well down the line?
Oh, yeah, it was when Penny Lane had split up. I got asked to join an Irish band. And I thought the mandolin would complement the Irish band. There was also one thing, I was on Church Street in Liverpool one day. And a fellow called Bob from the ambulance duo was collecting money for Alder Hey Kids Hospital. And he was playing Dr. Shabago on the mandolin, so I stood and listened to him for a little while. And I thought, I'm going to buy a mandolin. I was just mesmerised by the sound. So I'd run up the next day, bought a mandolin, and I learned all the Irish songs on it as well. And it complemented the Irish band, so it's just yours.
Lovely. Okay, I'm with George Long, and we're looking at George's life and times, and so far we've got down Penny Lane, and that took George right round Europe, and like everything else, good times come to an end. So how did the band actually split? Did it just fizzle out, or what happened?
The singer married my sister, the bass player. Every different town we'd play in, he'd fall in love with a girl from that town and spend a lot of time there. It just come to an end, seven, 8 years.
I mean, it's not surprising, really, when you look at things that last and things that you sort of evolve, and then I think this helps you to realise how good some of the bands are when they've kept going for so long, you know, like
Status
Quo, for example.
Well, we've lived in each other's pockets for years, same bed and breakfast, the back of the van we gave, the bed and breakfast, yeah. The van we gave, yeah.
Did you have any particularly bad fallings out while you were touring, or anything like that?
Well, I think every band does, yeah, we've had arguments, ups and downs, and actually come to blows sometimes.
Yeah. And was it ever a question of people trying to change the music style, or was it what sort of things did you tend to fall out over?
You're saying it was the drive who was getting dropped off first. Silly things, really. Nothing. You come through the customs, you have a few too many cigarettes, you put them in the van.
Yeah. On your travels with Penny Lane, what would you say would have been probably your favourite gigs? Where did you like to go?
Oh, it's lovely playing in your hometown. We used to love doing the Upon and Labour Club in Skelmersdale, where we lived. But apart from that, it would have been the time we got on TV.
Right, tell us about that.
Well, that was, we got a phone call. Someone said they were Claire Goodman, a researcher from the BBC. So we're going to do a documentary on John Lennon, and we're looking for a modern day band that still play the Beatles songs. And I said, I believe you. And I put the phone down. So they rang back, said, but don't hang up. And eventually I did believe her, and we agreed to do a show in the Coconut Grove in Liverpool.
Oh, right, yeah.
They built a replica of the cabin. I can see why your TV license costs so much. You have plumbers, churners, electricians, decorators, and the presenters, light men, cameramen. spent a day building the cabin and filming us, but they were all accommodated in the best hotels, right? You can see why TV equipment was costing so much.
That is the problem, isn't it? I mean, really, if people want to look at cost cutting, and, you know, coming from an area that we come from, where people do look carefully, we do look carefully at our money in general, you can see that there can be cuts made. If people need to be a little bit more moderate with the way that they have their expenses, you know, even something like that, you could find a bed and breakfast and then, you know, all go into bed and breakfast for a couple of days or whatever. But, you know, I can see what you mean. So, now, that show went out when, roughly?
Ooh, that would have been within a year of John Lennon being shot, I think. We might have seen ourselves on TV. They filmed us for the day.
Yeah.
And we were only on TV for maybe 60 seconds.
Yeah.
But it was a critical shock for the production of the documentary.
Yeah.
But it was just a wonderful thing to do. Then your booking fee goes up, you get a bit more money.
Of course.
Because you've been on telly now.
Yeah. What about the Beatles themselves? Did you have a particular strong following for the Beatles? Did you love what they did, or, you know?
I think coming from Liverpool, it's sort of bred into you. I just like the music, the songs, the harmonies, everything about them I like.
Favourite song?
I haven't really got, I like all the Beatles songs.
Okay. I'm a bit like that, I said, I do like many Beatles songs, and it's hard. For me, I think I even prefer the pre-Sgt. Pepper stuff. I did like the early stuff. You know, if you're really looking for a favourite, I think I'd find it probably in the earlier Chains and Anna and Go To Him and all that sort of stuff, you know.
Yeah, when you went down Germany, yeah. I've listened to all those. I'd say maybe All My Lovin' would be my favourite.
Right, okay, that's interesting. Right, so you then had a telephone call. Hello there, George, are you free for playing your mandolin for us or anything like that?
But it's funny, I've always done a bit of keep pace. After Penny Lane split up, I was in the weightlifting gym one day,
yeah.
And there was a big local band in the area called the Ferryman. And they come down to the weightlifting gym and said, "I believe you've left Penny Lane." He split up and said, "Yeah." He said, "We're looking for the guitarist, would you join us?" So I went to Manchester that night with them. I didn't have a clue of any of the stuff, but they told me what the keys were and I could twiddle around on the guitar.
Right.
It was a 5-piece band with a manager. I'd become a full-time member. And we'd done lots of work in London. And that was when I took the mandolin up to complement the Irish sound.
Right, lovely. So tell us a little bit about the Ferrymen then. Do you know much about them as you should do by now, of course.
Well, the singer was from Dublin. Him and his family moved over here. He was the best singer I've ever worked with. He used to make the hair on the back of my neck stand up. It was unbelievable, the voice he had. How he never become a star, I don't know. And I was really proud to be working with him.
Well done, yeah. What sort of song did he sing that really did that for you?
Oh, he done all the Irish ballads. He called himself more of a balladeer. He didn't like the faster songs. He liked all the slow ones. Maggie would be a lot of my favourite song. A lot of the stuff that Foster Lamb did and Daniel O'Donnell did.
Lovely.
But far superior.
Yeah. Because it does always surprise me, the number of people who are particularly good that never ever make it. I mean, so much so that really, it's almost like some of this is preordained and you know, you're going to be big no matter what,
yeah.
Or you're never going to get anywhere no matter how hard you try. Yeah, it is weird. So, whereabouts did the Ferryman play?
I don't know how Owen ended up in Scammersdale, but that was how I started working on them. It was predominantly in London. To start, we used to go to London on a Thursday and come back on a Monday. Then we started working on the Irish community in Birmingham. Then I was glad when we started working in Manchester because we cut the travelling out.
Yeah.
It was the nicest job I've done with Owen. We eventually whittled our way down to a duo.
Right.
It was a 5-piece band and money getting tight here and there.
Yeah.
The drummer went, the keyboard player went, the bass player went. So we got a drum machine, the manager went, and we worked as a duo. But we've done 4 months in the Porte Grand in Dubai.
Fantastic.
And that was great.
So how did that gig come about?
We had an Irish agent in Liverpool that used to ring us up now and again with work. He sent us to Mallorca and Ibiza, and then we got this job in Dubai for 4 months, which was a marvellous experience going there. We went in September and come back in January, and I'll never forget it. The kids wouldn't open the Christmas presents. Christmas, I wasn't there, so the wife and the kids, they kept Christmas leg up back on the 16th of January, and that was great.
Let's...
Oh, come on, Tanamera. Over the years, any tunes that have stuck in my head that I like, I can pick up really quickly on the mandolin. So I've recorded a CD of songs that I like, but I'm really fortunate because everyone else that listens to them like them.
One of them is particularly Spanish. I've always thought of it as being a very, very Spanish song.
Yeah, it is. When I first started playing it, I got told it was an Italian tune, so I just went along with it. But it is Spanish, isn't it?
It is, lovely. Okay, let's have a little listen then. George along with me, and George, of course, now with me in Spain, looking for a great new future with this mandolin. So, calling you from the Costa Blanca, and it's always nice to see somebody starting a new life and doing something that, when we first came out here, you know, you think it's such a huge, well, it was a big move, but I mean, these days, it's still a lot of effort and worry, and, you know, when you start, you've got to have both of you thinking in exactly the same direction. So, tell us a bit about Angie, and what does she feel about this move?
Oh, she's absolutely thrilled with it. She's worked for 27 years in a maximum security hospital in Liverpool, and before they were going to start looking around with a pension, she had a very good pension there. She thought, well, I'm going to at least take early retirement and get out now. So I said, well, if you're retired, and I'm retired, and I was working for the past 5 years as a driving instructor. So once it got to her 55th birthday, that was when she could officially take early retirement. We sold the house, we sold everything we owned, up sticks, bought a mobile home. Went to the Fringe in Edinburgh, we've done 3 weeks up there.
Oh, lovely.
Travelled right down the east coast of Britain, all the towns I've never seen, Skegness and Scarborough and Whitby, seen all them. Then we got the ferry to Denmark, went to Copenhagen, then travelled right down through Germany, visiting all the towns that I worked in the 80s. It was nice. In the 80s, I didn't get to see the towns. We seen the back of the van and the army barracks. So it was nice popping down, seeing the countryside, seeing where we played. Then we ended up at the Black Forest, then we went to Switzerland, then came back up to Luxembourg. Then let's come back to Britain and get a wheel bearing fixed on the van. Then we got the ferry to Santander just over a week ago, worked our way across Spain and ended up at a campsite in Benidorm.
I'm laughing because I actually am a big believer, we've spoken about this before, I am a believer that something drags you down here, something guides you, something makes you want to be here. There's something very different about this place, I don't know what it is. But I mean, I've found a number of coincidences that have existed in my life through being here and people I've met. And I think you've already seen a bit of this, haven't you?
Yeah, there are some strange coincidences. Even at the campsite that we ended up on, I met a fantastic musician called Norman Hyam, a couple of years ago at a jam night at Southport or Rumsteak or somewhere there. And I mentioned to this fellow, when the wife retires, we're going to be getting off in a mobile home, travelling around, seeing Europe. He said, if you ever get to Spain, and he wrote the name of a campsite down, Camp Blank, and he gave us his phone number. It was on the back of a beer mat. I threw that in a drawer. So when we got off the ferry at Santander, we just drove down in the sat nav campsite around Benidorm, and we ended up in a campsite a quarter of a mile away from where Norman had recommended. We didn't like the campsite particularly, and we looked at a map and found another one, Camp Blank, right on the sea. And I was looking through some paperwork, and we found the beer mat that Norman had written out 2 years earlier, and his number was on it. So I gave him a ring, and he was in our team just around the corner from where we were. He couldn't believe it, I couldn't believe it. And he's been a marvel, he's only been here for a week, he's taken us all around everywhere. Showed us all the sights.
And of course, you do need friends like this to get you started, and it's funny, you see, I met Norman in a rather weird way. I was buying a new amplifier, I think it was. And I've gone to Rudy's music shop. If anybody, I'll give him a quick plug, because if anybody needs any gear, Rudy's shop is in Alfaz del P, and Rudy will do anybody a favour. And he normally was a great, great deal for you, and I can only recommend as I find. So there we are, Rudy, you've got a nice little plug in there. And there were two fellas that were in the shop, and I wasn't really paying attention to them, because basically I was talking to Rudy, and my missus spotted that one of them spoke with a Liverpool accent, and we all tend to say hello to the Scousers, because obviously we're from the same area, and you normally say hello, and then you see if you know anybody that you know. So the next thing is, I was talking with Norman. Norman is a friend of Peter Risson, who again is somebody I've known for a long time, and Pete used to be with, I think it was Mark. Peter's and the Silhouettes, I think, was the group that he was with. So, you know, the whole thing begins to start weaving its little magic, and you think, yes, there is something about being out here. Because even though you might be living in the same area, why should you be doing this, going to the same music shop at exactly the same time and that sort of thing?
Yeah, very coincidental.
Isn't it? Okay, let's go to the ferryman again, and how did that finish?
Like most things, it ran its course, but the singer, he enjoyed a drink, and he got banned for drink driving. Then he got caught driving while banned.
Oh dear.
Then he pinched his brother's license, his brother was here, and hired a car on his brother's license. So there's many there. I suppose it was his drinking, really, was his downfall.
The demon.
Yeah.
And isn't it really weird, because, you see, I was with a lad from Roscommon, and you know, we went out as a duo. He used to sing all the Irish songs, and he used to be very good, and I used to play some backing for him, and, you know, then we'd do my songs. I used to love going out and doing our work, but he couldn't handle the drink. And, you know, one particular night we're coming home, and it was more than just a question of, you know, if it was just like he was a bit tiddly and silly and laughing, that would be okay. But you don't want to give a lift down to somebody who wants to fight you. What's the point of that? You know, that's what that all about.
So he's one of the best singers I've worked with. I found over the years that the better the singer, the dafter they are sometimes. They're a really marvellous vocalist, and they've got some silly traits.
I can see where you're coming from. Now, also, you've got success in the family with your lad. Tell me about the family, first of all.
I've been married and divorced there. Angie's got a son and a daughter. They live down south. I've got my two sons there. One works in the solicitor's office, and the other one sort of followed me a little bit into music. He started off as a roadie for me, setting my guitar gear up.
Yes.
And he was run over and started having a little bass on the drums and helping a drummer set his kit up. So he'd be about 15, 16, and he said, Dad, can I have a drum kit? Now, I was wanting him to become a guitarist, but he loved the drums. And the little band he's got going, he got a record in the charts in Holland about 18 months ago. And earlier this year, he got a record in the charts in Germany, so it looks like he might be getting off the ground. It's a very commercial rock, a bit like Bon Jovi, yeah.
So do they have a name for them?
Well, they're called the Arkanes.
The
Arkanes, spelled with a K.
Okay. Does it have any significance?
I don't think so. It's because it dominates the band. He writes all the songs and tells them what to call them, what they're going to play, and how they're going to play it.
Right. Okay, so, you've got your stuff here, you've got your camper van, you've got Andy's with you, you've got friends here.
So we're making friends every day, thanks to meeting Norman, really, and he introduced me to you, which is...
So what can you see as your next major step? What will you do?
Well, we fell in love with the little campsite that we're on in Benazon. It was a bit strange at first, going home to that's now you have, that's where you live, that's your house, the motorhome, but Angie's loving it, it's what she's wanted to do, and I'm loving it. It's the weather's great, the people are great, and we're getting a chance to go out and play the music I like playing now, which is great.
Now, the big thing, of course, is Spain has got a recession, and, it isn't a good time to be here. Both of us should be thinking, whoa, what have we done? But, is that crossing your mind at all? Are you worried about the future?
A bit of a safety net. We've got some money in the bank. Everything fell through here. We can go back to England. But we're loving it here. It's working out great. We'll stay here for as long as we're fit and healthy, I think.
Yeah. How does Spain stack up in your experience to the other countries that you've worked and played in? Because you've obviously experienced quite a bit, haven't you?
I've played all around Britain, all around Ireland, around the Middle East, all around Europe. But actually, living there, I think, we've only been here for just over a week, but I think it's fantastic.
Okay, what about Dubai? Would you live in Dubai?
I don't think so, no. I wouldn't live there.
So what would be the downside of living in Dubai?
The downside is, the weather's fantastic. It's just the bit of the conflict going on at the moment with the religion, really.
Right, and of course the surrounding countries, I would imagine, is a bit of a downer, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it's not something I would like to live in, but I just feel more relaxed and safe here. Away from Dubai, we lived in a big mansion with an American band. But it was work. I've never been there on holiday. Before we come to Spain, we have been here on holiday, so we knew what it was like, we knew what to expect, sort of thing.
Yeah. Where have you been to on holiday?
All over Spain. Been to Benazon a few times. Yeah, Mallorca, Ibiza, Gibraltar.
So you've got a good feel for Spain. What about Germany? Would you live in Germany?
We really like the Black Forest. I didn't know the climate was so good there. It's nice and warm, clean, law and order. It seemed like a nice place to live.
Yeah.
And we were picking up bits of the German language. We spent a month in Germany.
Right.
But we really like it here. We're very happy here.
Okay.
For the foreseeable future.
I'm going to keep asking about these other countries. Denmark. How would you see yourself in Denmark?
Really enjoyed Denmark. That was fantastic. Very, very friendly people, very nice people. They could all speak English. That was a plus.
Yeah.
We stayed there for a week, seen all the sights there. And we went to Hamburg. That was great. We got taken on a guided tour of Ringo Starr used to play when he was with Rolling Stone and Hurricanes.
Right.
Where the Beatles used to play. And
did you meet King Size Taylor while you were out there? Teddy Taylor, a big star in Germany.
Oh, no, I don't think so. No.
Yeah, I've had a couple of nice interviews with Teddy, and basically he is the man to be around in Hamburg, that's for sure, you know.
Oh, we never met him. I think he stayed in Hamburg for maybe 2 days, but we were travelling across, but all the way down to Switzerland.
Well, my sisters have lived abroad for 40-odd years. One has just come to live here, actually. Our Mary has just decided that she's had enough of Switzerland, and she wants to come and live in Albania, so she's made the decision and she's living here now. She's been here 4 years. It took her 4 years to really feel settled, but then again, I think with having the music makes more friends, and I think it makes you a little bit more of a commodity that other people can say, well, yeah, I think, you know, it'd be nice to have George about, because, you know, his sound would be good here, sort of thing, you know. So I think there is that to it. What would be the ideal situation for you?
I think we've almost got it. I want to start working the club we met in today.
Country Ribs,
yeah. Well, I've got two jobs a week in there.
Lovely.
Doing disco karaoke and playing Shadows music and a bit of mandolin. And I also, I really enjoy busking. Just sitting down in the sunshine and busking on the mandolin. Well, this tune reminds me of
Okay, George. Look, it's been lovely talking to you. I can only say best of luck. Liverpool Road's got to be, isn't it?
Thanks very much, Vincent.
You're welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.